Hi, this is Sukyun Lee, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The most nightmare scenario I can imagine with AI and robotics is a world where robots have become so powerful that they are able to control or manipulate humans without their knowledge. This could lead to an oppressive society where the rights of individuals are no longer respected.
A group of leading artificial intelligence experts are warning AI poses a societal level risk of extinction on par with pandemics and nuclear war. We'll speak to one of the godfathers of AI and two other leading experts on the rapid rise of AI technology and the risk it poses. Plus, as the House approves a bipartisan deal to suspend the debt ceiling, we'll look at why student debt relief advocates oppose a controversial part of the deal.
The current debt ceiling agreement, as it stands now, has a provision that completely ends the pause on student debt payments and codifies it into law so that the pause can never be extended again.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House of Representatives has approved legislation to suspend the debt ceiling just days before the U.S. is set to run out of money to pay its bills. Wednesday's vote was 314 to 117, with a majority of House Democrats voting in favor. If it's approved by the Senate, the legislation will cap domestic spending below the current rate of inflation while allowing larger increases to the military budget. House Minority Whip Catherine Clark said Republicans had forced Democrats' hand.
There is no perfect negotiation when you are the victims of extortion. Nobody likes to pay a ransom note, and that's exactly what tonight's vote is.
Some Republicans voted against the deal, saying it didn't cut enough from social programs. Meanwhile, nearly 40 members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus voted no. Caucus Chair Congressmember Pramila Jayapal of Washington slammed the legislation, saying it, quote, rips food assistance away from poor people and disproportionately black and brown women, pushes forward pro-corporate permitting policies and a pipeline in direct violation of the community's input and claws back nearly 25% of the funding Democrats allocated for the IRS to go after wealthy tax cheats, unquote. The bill now heads to the Senate, which will need to act quickly to avoid a catastrophic default on U.S. debts before a June 5th deadline set by the Treasury Department. In Sudan, at least 19 people were killed, more than 100 injured, as shells fired from a tank hit a market in a neighborhood south of Khartoum. The deadly violence came after Sudan's army said it was abandoning U.S. and Saudi-brokered ceasefire talks with the rival Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group. On Wednesday, the U.N.'s World Food Program said aid workers had been able to reach civilians in the Khartoum metropolitan area for the first time since fighting broke out April 15th. The WFP says Sudan's conflict could increase the number of people facing food insecurity by about 2.5 million in the coming months. Ukrainian officials say Russian airstrikes on Kyiv overnight killed three people, including a mother and her 11-year-old daughter. Those attacks came as pro-Russia officials said five people had been killed by artillery fire in a Russian-occupied village in eastern Ukraine. Russia also said Ukrainian drones struck two oil refineries near Russia's biggest oil export terminals, triggering a large fire at one of the sites. In Washington, D.C., White House spokesperson John Kirby announced the Biden administration is sending Ukraine an additional $300 million in military equipment, including more Patriot air defense systems, anti-aircraft Stinger missiles, and ammunition. North Korea has failed in its first attempt to put a spy satellite into orbit. On Wednesday, a North Korean rocket crashed into the sea west of South Korea after its second stage reportedly lost thrust. Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of leader Kim Jong-un, said afterwards North Korea would attempt more satellite launches. The rocket's launch triggered air raid sirens in South Korea and Japan. In Seoul, a presidential alert sent to all mobile phones warned 10 million citizens to prepare to evacuate, triggering panic. Seoul's mayor later defended the alert.
This emergency message could be a working level official's overreaction, but it was not a mistake. Our principle is to respond in a manner that can be seen as excessive, and there can be no compromise on safety.
The Tokyo Electric Power Company is facing mounting opposition over its plans to pump 1.3 million tons of contaminated wastewater from the Fukushima nuclear power plant into the sea. The water contains dangerous radionuclides from the 2011 meltdown of three reactors at the site, triggered by a massive earthquake and tsunami. This week, the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency signed off on the planned release of wastewater by the plant's operator, Tokyo Electric Power Company. The plan has triggered protests in Japan and in South Korea, where anti-nuclear activists recently staged demonstrations.
I can't believe that the Japanese government's plan to release nuclear contaminated water has gone as far as it has. The impact on our oceans and the rest of the Pacific Rim will be enormous. So I think South Korea and the neighboring countries should work together to postpone the decision on nuclear polluted water discharge.
In Tennessee, a 32-year-old woman has received an emergency hysterectomy after doctors initially refused to provide an abortion to end her high-risk pregnancy. The surgery left Maren Hollis unable to bear more children. Hollis was finally granted surgery nearly a week after she was first admitted to a Tennessee hospital for excessive bleeding. She only survived after receiving a large transfusion of blood. Tennessee law criminalizes performing an abortion as a felony punishable by up to 15 years in prison, with only a narrow exception for medical emergencies. Meanwhile, the Biden administration says it's reconsidering a plan to move the headquarters of the U.S. Space Command to Alabama, citing the state's near-total ban on abortion. In response, Republican lawmakers from Alabama threatened to freeze federal spending on Space Command's temporary headquarters in Colorado Springs. In news from Georgia, a police SWAT team raided a home in Atlanta Wednesday and arrested three organizers with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund. The nonprofit group has been raising money to bail out protesters opposed to the construction of a massive police training facility known as Cop City. Lawyers have described the raids and arrests on the bail fund as unprecedented. On Wednesday, Kamau Franklin with the group Community Movement Builders spoke at a rally outside the DeKalb County Jail.
We will not be intimidated.
No,
we will not be stopped.
No, we
will not be out organized.
No. Right.
We will not let them time and time again take the only thing that they have at their disposal, which is the brutal nature of their police force, tearing themselves on us to stop us. We will fight back here in the city of Atlanta. We will fight back in the state of Georgia. We will call our caravans and organizers to come all the way across the country. One more time.
The raid on the bail fund comes as 42 activists face domestic terrorism charges for opposing Cop City. The Atlanta City Council is expected to hold a key vote on Cop City on June 5th. The city recently admitted the public cost of the project will top $67 million, twice as high as originally stated. To see all our interviews with activists about Cop City, go to democracynow.org. A jury in Los Angeles has found actor Danny Masterson guilty of raping two women he met through the Church of Scientology. The jury hung on a third rape charge. Witnesses testified during the trial. Officials in the Church of Scientology pressured them not to talk to police about the rape allegations. Masterson is best known for his starring role in the sitcom That 70s Show. He faces 30 years to life in prison at a sentencing hearing scheduled for August. NASA has held its first public meeting of a panel studying unidentified aerial phenomena, commonly known as UFOs. The 16-member panel said Wednesday more high-quality data is needed to explain many of the sightings, but that there's no evidence any of them could be explained by extraterrestrial origins. Wednesday's event at NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C., came after Congress last year held its first hearings on the subject in over half a century. The 2024 field of Republican presidential candidates is expected to soon grow. Former Vice President Mike Pence, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum are all expected to formally launch campaigns next week. Many political analysts say the crowded field could help increase Donald Trump's chances of securing the Republican nomination again. And here in New York, the elected student commencement speaker at the City University of New York School of Law is facing death threats after she criticized the Israeli government's treatment of Palestinians during her speech. Fatima Mohammed, who is Yemeni-American, addressed the CUNY Law School's graduating class in early May after being elected to speak by her classmates.
Israel continues to indiscriminately rain bullets and bombs on worshipers, murdering the old, the young, attacking even funerals and graveyards as it encourages lynch mobs to target Palestinian homes and businesses, as it imprisons its children, as it continues its project of settler colonialism, expelling Palestinians from their homes.
Fatima Mohammed also spoke out against white supremacy and the New York Police Department. She's since faced a torrent of criticism from the New York Post and other right-wing media outlets and Republican politicians, as well as some Democrats, including Congressmember Richie Torres and New York City Mayor Eric Adams. On Tuesday, more than 2 weeks after Mohammed spoke, the CUNY Board of Trustees and the Chancellor responded to the criticism by declaring Mohammed's remarks to be a form of, quote, hate speech. However, Mohammed has received public support from the Jewish Law Students Association at CUNY and other groups. The New York City chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace issued a statement saying, quote, "We decry the false characterization of her speech as anti-Semitic simply because she accurately describes the conditions Palestinians live under every day," they said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, coming up, a group of leading artificial intelligence experts are warning AI poses a societal-level risk of extinction on par with pandemics and nuclear war. Stay with us. Perfect Algorithm, composed by Anthony Willis for the movie Megan, a horror comedy about a mean girl robot named Megan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. We begin today's show looking at growing alarm over the potential for artificial intelligence to lead to the extinction of humanity. The latest warning comes from hundreds of artificial intelligence or AI experts, as well as tech executives, scholars, and others like climate activist Bill McKibben, who signed on to an ominous one-line statement released Tuesday that reads, quote, mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. Among the signatories to the letter released by the Center for AI Safety is Jeffrey Hinton, considered one of the three godfathers of AI. He recently quit Google so he could speak freely about the dangers of the technology he helped build, such as artificial general intelligence, or AGI, in which machines could develop cognitive abilities akin or superior to humans sooner than previously thought.
I'd always assumed that the brain was better than the computer models we had. And I'd always assumed that by making the computer models more like the brain, we would improve them. And my epiphany was, a couple of months ago, I suddenly realized that maybe the computer models we have now are actually better than the brain. And if that's the case, then maybe quite soon they'll be better than us. So that the idea of superintelligence, instead of being something in the distant future, might come much sooner than I expected. For the existential threat, the idea it might wipe us all out, that's like nuclear weapons, because nuclear weapons had the possibility they would just wipe out everybody, and that's why people could cooperate on preventing that. And for the existential threat, I think maybe the US and China and Europe and Japan can all cooperate on trying to avoid that existential threat. But the question is, how should they do that? And I think stopping development isn't feasible.
Many have called for a pause on introducing new AI technology until strong government regulation and a global regulatory framework are in place. Joining Hinton in signing the letter was a second AI godfather, Joshua Benjua, who joins us now for more. He's a professor at the University of Montreal, founder and scientific director of MILA, the Quebec Artificial Intelligence Institute. In 2018, he shared the prestigious Computer Science Prize, the Turing Award, with Jeffrey Hinton and Yann LeCun. Professor Benjua is a signatory of the Future of Life Institute open letter, calling for a pause on large AI experiments. Professor Benjua, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us as we talk about an issue that I think most people cannot begin to comprehend. So if you could start off by talking about why you've signed this letter warning of extinction of humanity. But talk about what AI is first.
Well, thanks for having me first, and thanks for talking about this complicated issue that requires more awareness. The reason I signed this, and like Jeff, I changed my mind in the last few months. What triggered this change for me is interacting with ChatGPT and seeing how far we had moved much faster than I anticipated. So I used to think that reaching human-level intelligence with machines could take many more decades, if not centuries, because the progress of science seemed to be, well, slow. And we were, as researchers, we tend to focus on what doesn't work. But right now, we have machines that pass what is called a Turing test, which means they can converse with us and they could easily fool us as being humans. That was supposed to be a milestone for, human-level intelligence. I think they're still missing a few things, but that kind of technology can already be dangerous to destabilize democracy through disinformation, for example. Because of the research that is currently going on to bridge the gap with what is missing from current large language models, large AI systems, it is possible that my horizon that I was seeing as many decades in the future is just a few years ago, a few years into the future, and that could be very dangerous. It suffices that just a small organization or somebody with crazy beliefs, conspiracy theory, terrorists, military organization decides to use this without the right safety mechanisms, and it could be catastrophic for humanity.
So, Professor Yoshua Bengio, it would be accurate then to say that the reason artificial intelligence and concerns about artificial intelligence have become the center of a public discussion in a way that they've not previously been, because the advances that have occurred in the field have surprised even those who are participating in it and the lead researchers in it. So if you could elaborate on the question of super intelligence, and especially the concerns that have been raised about unaligned super intelligence, and also the speed at which we are likely to get to unaligned super intelligence.
Yeah. I mean, the reason it was surprising is that in the current systems, from a scientific perspective, the methods that are used are not very different from the things we already knew just a few years ago. It's the scale at which they've been built, the amount of data, the amount of engineering that has made this really surprising progress possible. And so we could have similar progress in the future because of the scale of things. Now, the problem, first of all, you know, there is an important, why are we concerned about superintelligence? So first of all, there's the question is it even possible to build machines that will be smarter than us? And the consensus in the scientific community, for example, from the neuroscience perspective, is that our brain is a very complicated machine. So there's no reason to think that, in principle, we couldn't build machines that would be at least as smart as us. Now, then this question of how long it's going to take, but we've discussed that. In addition, as Jeff Hinton was saying in the piece that was heard, computers have advantages that brains don't have. For example, they can talk to each other at very, very high speed and exchange information. For us, we are limited by the very few bits of information per second that language allows us to do. And that actually gives them a huge advantage to learn a lot faster. So, for example, these systems today already can read the whole internet very, very quickly, whereas a human would require 10,000 years of their life reading all the time to achieve the same thing. So they can have access to information and sharing of information in ways that humans don't. So it's very likely that as we make progress towards understanding the principles behind human intelligence, we will be able to build machines that are actually smarter than us. So why is it dangerous? But because if they're smarter than us, they might act in ways that are not that do not agree with what we intend, what we want them to do. And it could be for several reasons, but this question of alignment is that it's actually very difficult to state, to instruct a machine to behave in a way that agrees with our values, our needs, and so on. We can say it in language, but it might be understood in a different way, and that can lead to catastrophes, as has been argued many times. This is something that already happens. I mean, this alignment problem already happens. So, for example, you can think of corporations not being quite aligned with what society wants. Society would like corporations to provide useful, you know, goods and services, but we can't dictate that to corporations directly. Instead, we've, you know, given them a framework where they maximize profit under the constraints of laws. And that may, you know, work reasonably, but also have side effects. For example, corporations can find loopholes in those laws, or even worse, they could influence the laws themselves. And this sort of thing can happen with AI systems that we're trying to control. They might find ways to satisfy the letter of our, you know, instructions, but not the intention, the spirit of the law. And that's very scary. We don't fully understand, you know, how these scenarios could unfold, but there's enough danger and enough uncertainty that I think a lot of attention, more attention, should be given to these questions.
I'd like to bring in our other guest, Max Tegmark, who is an MIT professor focused on artificial intelligence research. He wrote a recent piece for Time magazine headlined, "The Don't Look Up Thinking That Could Doom Us with AI." Welcome to Democracy Now!
I'm not hearing anything.
Ah. Could we please take care of that? Professor Tegmark, can you hear me now?
I'm hearing Yoshua Bengio, okay. But I'm not hearing Amy.
Professor...
When does this episode end?
Professor Bengio, let's go back to you. If you could explain whether you think it will be difficult to regulate this industry, artificial intelligence, despite all of the advances that have already occurred, how difficult will regulation be?
I'm hearing Amy and Joshua. When does this segment end? In 6 minutes?
Professor Bengio, can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, very good.
I was also hearing Max.
I see. If you could please just explain how difficult you think regulating the artificial intelligence will be, despite so many advances occurring so rapidly.
Even if something seems difficult, like dealing with climate change, and even if we feel that it's a hard task, to do the job and to convince enough people to and society to change in the right ways, we have a moral duty to try our best. And the first things we have to do with AI risks is get on with regulation, set up governance frameworks, both in individual countries and internationally. And when we do that, it's going to be useful for all the AI risks. Because we've been talking a lot about the extinction risk, but there are other risks that are shorter term, risks to destabilize democracy. If democracy is destabilized, this is bad in itself, but it actually is going to also hurt in our abilities to fight, to deal with existential risk. And then there are other risks that are actually, going on with AI, discrimination, bias, privacy, and so on. So we need to beef up that legislative and regulatory body. And what we need there is a regulatory framework that's going to be very adaptive, because there's a lot of unknown. It's not like we know precisely how bad things can happen. We need to do a lot more in terms of monitoring, validating, and we need and controlling access so that not any bad actor can easily get their hands on dangerous technologies. And we need the body that will regulate, or the bodies across the world, to be able to change their rules as new nefarious users show up, or as technology advances. And that's a challenge, but I think we need to go in that direction.
I want to try to once again bring Max Tegmark into the conversation. Max Tegmark is MIT professor focused on artificial intelligence. His recent Time magazine article, "The Don't Look Up Thinking That Could Doom Us with AI." If you could explain that point, Professor Tegmark, and also why you think right now, many people have just heard the term ChatGPT for the first time in the last months. The general public has become aware of this, and how you think it is most effective to regulate AI technology.
Yeah, thank you for the great question. I wrote this piece comparing what's happening now in AI with the movie Don't Look Up, because I really we're all living this film. We're, as a species, confronting the most dramatic thing that has ever happened to us, where we may be losing control over our future, and almost no one is talking about it. So I'm so grateful to you and others for actually starting to have that conversation now. And that's, of course, why we had these open letters that you just referred to here, to really
help mainstream this conversation that we have to have. That people previously used to make fun of you when you even brought up the idea that we could actually lose control of this and go extinct, for example.
Mr. Tegmark, you've drawn analogies, in fact, when it comes to regulation, with the regulations that were put in place on biotech and physics. So could you explain how that might apply to artificial intelligence?
Yeah. To appreciate what a huge deal this is when the top scientists in AI are warning about extinction, it's good to compare it with the other two times in history that it's happened, that leading scientists warned about the very thing they were making. It happened once in the 1940s when physicists started warning about nuclear Armageddon, and it happened again in the early 1970s with biologists saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't start making clones of humans and edit